and welcome to Inside Education. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. The programme's website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of over 140 Inside Education programmes. It is my pleasure this week to welcome back a man who is familiar to listeners of Inside Education because of his seasonal visits to the programme. A former teacher, Paddy Madden currently works with student teachers in the Merino Institute of Education. He is known to teachers and children throughout the country for his regular school visits and his work on school gardens, mini beasts and the X Factor for birds. He has been a guest on the programme in spring and summer this year to share ideas of what teachers can do in those seasons. Now that the autumn is here, I invited Paddy back to the programme to make suggestions for teaching SESE in autumn time. I began our interview by asking Paddy how he can tell that autumn has arrived.
I suppose, look at the foggy mornings, season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. But I suppose it's the leaves on the trees that are the big giveaway. And then the shortening days and the change of weather. And the fruits and in the hedgerows and on the trees. Yeah, those would be the more obvious signs. Yeah.
So if you were going on a nature walk at this time of the year with children, what would you be looking out for on a nature walk at this time of the year?
Yes, well, last week I took the senior classes, 3rd to 6th in Bellewstown National School on a school nature walk. The walk, we would look at leaves and colours and maybe get them to take a selection of leaves with different colours and stick them onto the board, just a variety, maybe pick 5 different colours that they might find. Looking at the different fruits and asking the children how they are dispersed, you know, which ones are dispersed by wind, for example. You would show them then that some seeds, for example, are dispersed by explosion. Some of them by parachute, and some seeds are dispersed by sensor movement. You know what a sensor is? C-E-N-S-E-R, I think is how you spell it. It's what you have in the church that they shake for the incense. Well, the poppy is the same. If you look at the poppy, it's little holes on the top, and when the wind shakes the poppy, the seeds are dispersed and carried away. You'd look at seed dispersal by animals, you know, the nuts and that are carried away by squirrels and other rodents and buried, and sometimes they forget where they are. They forget what the oak, where the oaks have been buried, and they sprout into new trees. Some dispersed by humans. Have you ever walked in a wood and got the cleaver sticking onto you, or the goose grass? Well, it's not because it's trying to annoy you at all. It's just because it says, right, you're a good host and I can cling on to you. Or a burdock, another one that'll be carried away by the human. So those are different ways that you'd get the children to look at. Looking at the fruits then of the hedgerow. And children sometimes have a misconception about fruit. When you ask them what's a fruit, they think of an apple. But they always think of a succulent fruit. They think of the drupe, for example, the one like a sloe with a big stone in the middle, which is the seed, or a berry, which would have a lot of little seeds inside in it, or a pome, which is an apple with a core of seeds, if you look at it. But then you have the dry fruits, which are the helicopters we're looking at, and the ash keys, which are dispersed by the wind.
And what kind of a location would you go to for this kind of a nature walk in the autumn to see nature at its best?
Well, definitely the hedgerow, and long may they continue in Ireland, the Irish hedgerow. That is the shrub layer. As you know, a hedge has got 4 layers in it. It has the ground layer where all the decomposition is taking part. And that's a good place to start in autumn, looking at decomposers, looking at what is breaking down, all those leaves and all the nourishment is returning to the soil again. You're looking at the humble woodlouse and all the work it does, eating those rotting leaves and wood and breaking it down. Then you look at the worm also breaking everything down. Then you're into food chains there on the ground, on the ground layer of the wood. You're looking at centipedes, you know, they're chasing the wood lice, and little birds and robins and blackbirds are chasing them. So there's then the pygmy shrew, which is a little mammal, comes squeaking along the hedgerow, and pygmy shrews eating wood lice. They have to eat their own weight of them every day in order to survive. And then you have the hedgehog coming along, and the fox and the badger. So a lot of activity going on down there. I call them the undertakers, those people. They're carrying away all the dead stuff. I remember in the day in Bellustown, we looked along the hedgerow and we look at the ground layer, and we found some fantastic fungi. But then we came to a little woodland area, and we decided that it was time for them to be creative. They had done all the work, and so we said, put away all your clipboards and pencil. It said, this is great. And we divided them up into groups of four or five, and we said to them, now, I want you to use the woodland here, all the decomposition that's going on, the rotting leaves and all the moss and bits of branches and everything, and we're going to make a house for the fairies, because they're going to come, we are going to be gone, they're going to come, make the house. Wouldn't it be great if they came in and we had houses made for them? Well, honest to God, it's just amazing to see. You just give them the trigger. You tell them, don't tell them how to do it. But we found five or six groups we had, each one totally different, each house. I mean, the houses built with beautiful roof on them, made out of moss, and little pathways made out of stone going up to them, and twigs arranged, and little gates done with more twigs. And you'd actually, if you were that tiny, you'd love to live in them yourselves.
When you come back to the classroom, having, you know, looked at the trees and looked at the evidence of animals and so on, what can you do then back in the classroom to help reinforce what you've seen with the children?
Well, at this time of year, I make a hedgerow in a box. You just get a cardboard box, cut sides of it diagonally, put some plastic at the bottom, and create the four layers of a hedge. And get the children to work with you. Bring in all the ingredients. Bring in your bits of rotting wood, your leaves. Get some fungi as well, and moss. And create the ground layer. Have plenty of stuff there on that ground layer. And then the flower layer of a wood, well, you can't at this time, all the flowers have gone to bed until next April, so you leave that alone. But then get some oasis, you know, for your flowers. Go into your, next time you're buying the flowers, keep the oasis or the sponge, really wet them, and stick in little bits of ivy, little bits of hazel, little bits of holly in their elderberry, just, and wild rose, to create that shrub layer. And then if you can bring in sort of long twigs then from trees, ash, oak and that, for them. Put them at the back, and they're taller than the rest. That's your canopy, a tree layer. So you've three layers of the wood, and just go through it with the children. Said that's all interconnected. Everything, those leaves are falling down from the canopy down to the bottom, but it's in that ground layer down there where they're being eaten up and decomposed, and then they make the trees and the flowers grow, and everything is escape. If you take away one layer, everything else is affected. So you make this hedgerow, keep it in your class, keep it watered, and let them see how the whole thing. But you're looking at a woodland edge, the same thing, same way. It's a woodland edge operates and the same. And then I bring in wood lice in a box, you know, and make a wood lousery with them, and just to let them see that these creatures are so important. All of that is up on the Blackrock website, blackrockec.ie. Click on Paddy's School Garden, how to make a hedgerow in a box and how to make a wood lousery.
And the hedgerow in a box, it's literally in a cardboard box?
Literally a cardboard box, but it looks like a real hedge once you get the layers in. And you paint the box green, And when you have the box done and painted green, everything blends in and it looks extremely. If you have little toy birds and animals, little mice and stuff, and just in to put them around it, a little hedgehog, it also makes it look authentic.
And the wood lousery, Paddy, what does that look like?
Wood lousery is a box, tin box, holes in the bottom. To let out if there's excess water put in, stones for drainage, some damp soil, rotting leaves, rotting logs, a little bit of mushroom they like, fungi, the wood lice, a little bit of moss put in to create it authentic, and then you just put in your wood lice. Put in some bark because they like to hide under bark. Wood lice, believe it or not, like to have something touching their back. As from experience, I know, and have a little sprayer just to spray them and tell the children that that these creatures are one of the oldest living creatures on the planet Earth, believe it or not. Seemingly they left the sea 50 million years ago and came out onto the land where they've been living ever since. They're crustaceans, of course, and the children find it fascinating to see their cousins of the lobster and the crab above all things. I have to say this, what really gets me is to go into a garden centre and see poisons, woodlouse killer. I mean, where are we going? If someone buys this stuff, they don't like woodlice, they're coming into their kitchen. Well, that's not the woodlouse's fault. The problem is the place's kitchen is damp, and it's up to the owner to do something about the dampness that's there, but not to kill the woodlice. They're going to come in. That's where they're attracted to.
Dublin's only special interest arts and cultural radio station, Dublin City FM.
The air is getting a little bit colder, Paddy, at this time of the year, and some animals decide that they can't stand the cold, so they go elsewhere. Can you tell us a little bit about migration at this time of the year?
The migration, well, a good way to look at that, of course, the swallows are gone and the cuckoo is gone and the corncrake are gone.
Where do they go?
Africa, we're talking about heading. It's such an amazing journey. It's a good idea to get a globe and actually follow the flight of the swallow. For example, they fly 9,500 kilometres, which is amazing. You know, follow their flight down through the continent, where in some places they shoot them as they pass over, down over the Mediterranean, down to face into the Sahara Desert, and the young swallows have never crossed before, so they cross on their own. For days they cross that desert, and many of them die as they cross the desert from thirst and hunger. And then they fly over the jungles and then down into Zambia and South Africa. What an amazing journey. And then next February to get ready to come back again. So children are fascinated to see that the flight of the swallow and all the dangers. The swallow, usually they lay maybe two clutches of six eggs in each, sometimes three, because they have to make up for the great losses. I read somewhere that 6 out of 10 of the adults don't make it on the journey, and 8 out of 10 of the young ones. Is extraordinary toll, isn't it, when you look at it or think of it that way. So that's why they have to. And of course the reason they migrate is for light. It's the light we have here, the long day to feed their babies with insects, whereas they wouldn't have that in Africa. If you've been in Africa, it's dark at around, 6 o'clock.
Oh, so they come here for the light?
Light and insects. And they're nearly 24/7 feeding the babies, and nearly all days. They're working from early morning until late, 10 o'clock at night, feeding, because those little babies are voracious eaters of insects, and that's why it's food really that brings them, and the amount of time they have to collect and the plentitude of it here is what does that. A good way of doing it is actually a lesson on migration is to get a suitcase and just fill it up with what you'd need if you're going on a holiday. And so you take out the suitcase. And you said to your children, "This, I need all these things going on my holidays. So what I'm going to do is pick out the toothbrush and toothpaste first." They say, "Well, what do you think of the swallow or the Brent goose, of course, coming to Ireland at this time of the year? You're thinking of migration into Ireland as well. We'll just take those two. Why don't they need a toothbrush?" And it'll take a while for children to tell you that the birds have no teeth. Birds haven't got teeth. And if they had, seemingly, they wouldn't be able to fly because the teeth would weigh them down. That's really the reason. So how do they digest their food? And did you ever see a hen picking up little stones and grit? And what are they doing with it? They're putting it into their gizzard and that swirling around. Just think of stones swirling and breaking down the food. So their teeth are in their stomach. And they love that one. So you can cross off, you know, your toothbrush and toothpaste. And then you take water. You're going to bring water with you. Of course, the bird can't do that, but they can actually drink seawater. And they can exude the salt to their skin, to their feces, and also to their eyes. Sometimes you see migratory birds have their eyes caked, and it's salt that they're excreting. So they can manage with that. We take our jumper clothes with us going to when we're travelling on holiday. They don't need any clothes because they have feathers. They have the downy feathers to keep them warm, and then the outside feathers. We bring soap with us to clean ourselves. They preen themselves. If you ever see them, they sometimes you'll see a bird having a dust bath. You know, all that dust is swirling around, but that's actually suffocating the little mites that they have. That's why they do it. And you can imagine all those little mites. Get us out of here, you know. But that's what the bird is doing. And of course they have a bird bath, you know, themselves, and they water themselves, so they don't need that. They don't need a raincoat or anything to keep the water away, because their feathers are waterproof. You've often seen a bird preening themselves. They're covering themselves with the oil from glands. It's just so that the water will wash off themselves. So they don't need that. They don't need to take out a map out of the suitcase or a compass and say, "Well, no, birds don't need that." They have a compass in there, seemingly in their head. They have a little magnet there, which, and they also use that, and they're also guided by the sun and the stars, which enables them to navigate. We might have sunglasses as well. You might take them out and put them on. Children get a great laugh at that. And then you say, "Well, the sun doesn't affect the birds because their eyes aren't in front of their head and they're on the side, and they're able to have a membrane as well which they pull down over their eyes, and that protects them from the sun." So, and they don't need sun cream, of course, because they're not going to be burned. They're able to put oil themselves, and as I said, we mentioned that already, all over themselves.
Just briefly, Paddy, the birds that leave us are what, and the birds that come here are what?
Well, the swallows, of course, and the swifts and the house martins, they're all gone, and they're the obvious ones with children, the cuckoo and the corncrake, they leave. Then we have the different geese to come in to Ireland at this time. The Brent goose would be one that people would see around here, for example.
They're from Greenland, are they?
Yeah, they come in to Ireland. And so they'd be the geese and ducks you're migrating as well.
Other animals, Paddy, they don't migrate, but they're getting ready for the winter and they start to hibernate. Yeah. What animals could we think about there?
Well, of course, the hedgehog is the obvious one, but not the squirrel. And this is a misconception. You see a lot of the nature books, the squirrel hibernates, but it doesn't. They're plenty of food, really. So that's a misconception. But the hedgehog, yeah. And a good way of showing that is actually to bring in certain stuff into the class and show the children how to make a hibernaculum, which is a box for hedgehogs to hibernate in. It's simply just a cardboard box, some straw, some bricks to make a tunnel to go in, a black polythene bag to make it waterproof, a little pipe to let in air into it, and you put this under a hedge in the school, but make it indoors and let the children make it with you and ask them questions and what materials we'll need, and then bring it outside and put it under a hedge in the school grounds. That's up on blackrockec.ie, Paddy's School Garden. The snails and slugs all disappear and hibernate underground. The frogs, of course, they go as well at this time of the year. Those are gone. And the wasp. Now, a lot of people think, God, isn't it great? They're all gone, you know. But they're all dead except the queen. Now, I have a queen in my shed at the moment. Nice, fat one. And she's up in the corner. It must have got in when the door was open. But I'm quite pleased. I know people have this thing about wasps. But the wasps disappear, so do the green flies and caterpillars multiply, because the queen wasp will wake up in the spring, and the first thing you'll hear is a gnawing, you know. If you hear this kind of scraping sound on the door, you know, you'd hear it like that, going scraping. That is the queen wasp, and what she's doing is she's actually chewing the wood and then mixing it with the saliva, making this paper nest, which she builds up, lays eggs in it, and then she feeds the young, and also the workers feed the young, on aphids, green flies, millions of them, and caterpillars. You ever see a wasp carrying a caterpillar? It's an amazing sight, and chopping them up. And a lot of these would be regarded as agricultural pests and pests in the garden. I don't think we realise. They're also pollinating plants as well. So they're extremely useful out there, the wasp.
The school garden, Paddy, in autumn, what needs to be done, or what can be done at this time of the year there?
Well, at this time of the year, I would always have a mehl in the garden, just collecting the leaves. Okay, you have to be careful of children with asthma, of course, because a lot of the spores are in the leaves, but just to make sure that they're not affected. But raking them up and putting them into a container, which simply you put four stakes in the ground a metre apart, and then surround that with a netted wire stapled, and have a little opening in the front. And all you do is throw in the rotting leaves in there. And after 2 years, that will have broken down into the most fantastic leaf mould. By using that, you can save and conserve peat. Okay, because that is the same stuff. You mix that in with soil in your garden and it just adds body and nourishment to the soil. I call it a brown gold because it's so easy to make. And it's not far better than throwing all those leaves into a skip when you can see it being recycled. Another thing, in the autumn time, you would sow daffodils indoors and hyacinths. Definitely hyacinths are fantastic to sow in a bottle. Just, you don't need any soil or anything. Just cut the top of a 2 litre bottle, perch your hyacinth on top, make sure it's an indoor hyacinth, bring the water up to the base of the hyacinth, put it into a dark press, and when the little stem on it is about 2.5 centimetres to 3 centimetres high, take it out of the press, leave it in the classroom, and you'll have the most fantastic scent around December, January. Really amazing. Daffodil, there's a daffodil called Paper White, which also has a lovely scent, and it's indoor. And just get a glass bowl, fill it up with stones, throw in some charcoal to stop it from smelling, and put your little daffodil bulbs, perch them on the stones, put water in, and leave them in your classroom. The children can see the roots developing, the shoots developing, and then the wonderful scent. So that's all up on Paddy's School Garden on the Blackrock website. You can also outdoors sow autumn raspberries. It's a good time of the year to sow autumn raspberries. A lot of people put fruit in the school garden, but sure, it comes out in the summer. Their own children are gone. The curtains aren't really good, or summer raspberries aren't fabulous to grow. But the autumn raspberry, there's a variety called Autumn Bliss. Now is a good time to plant them in a bed which is well composted and well manured, and they can be harvested from August, September time when children are back in school. So that's a good one. You can so put strawberries in now in beds as well, and they'll be nice and they'll come out earlier next year. So strawberries, raspberries, they're good at this time of the year. And you could sow apple trees. And I always encourage schools to grow the seed saver apple trees. Now, there's a fantastic organisation down in Scariff in County Clare who are saving the old varieties of apples that have withstood the trials of time, you know, wind and rain and frost and cold for hundreds of years in Ireland. They are the ones that suit our climate. So they are great. And, you know, nearly every, I think they have saved apple trees from nearly every county in Ireland. So you could have a Leitrim Red, for example. If you're in Leitrim, why not plant that tree up there? So it is nice to go into a school and see a little orchard of seed savers and the conservatory. You can sow in the autumn, coming in September into October, you can sow wheat in the school grounds, which are in a bed, which is very good to do. It's called winter wheat, and you let it grow, and then you harvest it the following year. You know, it takes a whole year. But I've seen wonderful stuff where the children pull up the wheat stems and they bash it against the ground, and that's what we call the threshing. Then they save up the seeds. You can give them little flat stones and round stones to imitate the quern, you know, the saddle quern that the first farmers used. Get them to grind the corn on the flat stone. Take in the grain and put it into a food processor inside, which is the mill, and just make the whole meal flour and make scones from it. So they're actually seeing the whole process of food production by growing wheat. Very easy to grow and very, very useful to grow as well in a school.
Paddy here, a mine of information as always. But of course, if people want to find out more about it, they can go to your book. You might just remind us.
Well, yeah, the book is, it's on its third edition. When that book was published back in 1996, people told me that I'd spend my lifetime trying to sell that first edition. None of the bookshops would take it. They said it wouldn't sell. I have the last laugh. It's on its third edition in full colour now. And if people want it, it's called Go Wild at School. And it really covers, I suppose, every habitat you could possibly want, both in your school garden and in your own back garden. And I suppose it's all about biodiversity and simple ways to get biodiversity going in your own plot, whether it's big or small. So Go Wild at School is available from myself, paddy.madden@mie.ie, and it's €15 plus 3p&p if people wanted to have a nice winter read and plan out for the spring.
And that was Paddy Madden from the Merino Institute of Education speaking to me earlier this week. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest this week, Paddy Madden. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.